Such genuine memory sometimes flashes up from what you call the subconscious into the conscious mind, through some channel suddenly opened. This can be caused by meeting for the first time a person whom you feel you have known, or by the sight of a place never before visited in this life, but with which you appear to have authentic associations and memories. All such experiences are mystifying to most Earth people. Yet such memories are usually true memories, and the explanation very simple. On other planets, we do not impose such blocks on the newborn child. On the contrary, everything is done to leave him free. We realize that each human expression is slightly different from every other, and that the individual background of experience serves as a foundation for the fulfilling of that particular destiny. The frequency under which a planet functions can be established only by the inhabitants who dwell thereon. Due to the higher frequency of our planets, those born amongst us are not subject to the slow periods of development from infancy to maturity as on yours. With us, an average period of development from birth through adolescence is 2 years, as compared with your 18 or more. You on Earth use the term the law of transmigration in a mistaken sense. What it really means is that when an individual on your Earth has risen above the ignorance of his brothers into a higher understanding of life, rebirth on another planet is permitted. He will come through with a vivid memory of his experience on Earth. Predominant will be his conception of the fundamental laws that govern all life. Memories of his daily habits, his relationship with his family and associates, while still clear, will be secondary. He will realize that there are no missing links between the two stages of life, but a continuity of development uncluttered by the many names and divisions which confused him on Earth. Although the climb up from infancy to maturity requires so long a period on your Earth, age and deterioration come quickly. This is due to the old traditions and conventions which continue to be expressed in the individual. True knowledge, no matter how long ago it was acquired, is easily carried. But the burdens and woes of mankind repeated over and over again, remembered through centuries, weigh insupportably on the spirit of man. As you have seen, we do not grow old in appearance or feeling. This is because we carry with us into each fresh day the bounty of lessons well learned, discarding all that has proven sterile. As we let the ever new and fresh express through us, we become that youthfulness. Just as the dreamer sculptor has when he takes the clay into his hands will, when he is finished, decide the form the clay will express, so it is with the human body. Man is the sculptor of himself, working with materials supplied by his creator. It is man's conception of himself within the universe which will mold his body and imbue his features with beauty or with ugliness. In your world you picture the deity as aged and yet eternal. This is a great contradiction. For eternity knows no age. Because of the endless activity going on within the depths and on the surface of your oceans, they survive through time. But a pond, wherein activity ceases, begins to show age by a mass of foreign matter that slowly dims its once clear waters. What you call stagnation has occurred. Bodily illness and disintegration derive from much the same process. Because you have not learned to live by natural law, personal stagnation sets in. Occasionally, even in your world, an individual can attain great age by your standards and still give the impression of youth. This is due to an ability to preserve the qualities of mental activity, interest and enthusiasm beyond the average. I recalled a few such people I had known and nodded agreement. "You have indeed progressed far beyond us," I said. "Is it even to the point where your progress forward is never broken?" This caused Firkin to smile. "Far from it. But when we make mistakes, they serve as lessons for our future behavior rather than something to hide or try to justify. Moreover, when any new territory is being explored, whether physical or of the mind, we accept some error as inevitable. To you, what you call failure is shameful and often exposes individuals or groups to the ridicule and censure of others. This is a primary factor in binding Earth people to old ruts when, had they the courage, or their fellow men enough tolerance, they would try new ways. On our worlds, no man who sincerely tries is ever considered a failure, no matter what the results. That man has learned something. Through his very failure, he can make a great contribution to his fellow man. Courage and enterprise have led him to try a new path which, if proven wrong, need not again be trod by others. He alone has suffered willingly, and we, his brothers, commend him. As Firkin stopped speaking and glanced at Ram, I knew that this fruitful talk was at an end. Nothing needed to be said as we rose from the booth. We settled the bill and were again out on the street. This time Firkin and Ram did not accompany me back to the hotel. I am very grateful, I said as we took leave of one another, the words sounding inadequate to my own ears. I stood for a moment, watching them walk away, then turned in the opposite direction toward my hotel. Again, the great master. Not long after our conversation in the cafe, again following an impression, I found myself en route to Los Angeles. All during the drive to that city, I was filled with a kind of joyous anticipation that was like the remembered excitement I used to experience as a child just before Christmas. The mental communications from my friends of other planets were becoming more and more definite as time went on. I knew now, for example, that this encounter would not be confined to a restaurant on the ground, but that they would again carry me up in one of their ships. In this happy mood, the familiar beauty of the mountains through which we rode during the first part of the journey seemed enhanced to even greater majesty, and the valleys, surfaced with golden yellow in the natural state, or a shining green where cultivated, filled me with love for this earth of ours. Surely, if mankind could learn only to look upon it with new eyes, there could be no room left for bitterness and strife. The time passed more quickly on this drive. I registered at the hotel, went briefly to my room, then returned to the lobby. Although the clock above the desk showed the time to be only a little after 5 p.m., and I certainly was not hungry, I felt strongly impelled to go now for something to eat at the little restaurant, then return to wait for my friends. This I did, and when, close to 6 o'clock, I was again about to enter the hotel, Ram stepped up to me. I greeted him with delight and asked if I had kept him waiting. Not at all, he said, I knew when to expect you. The Pontiac was parked by the curb around the corner. As we got in, I asked about Firkin. He is unable to come with us this time, Ram said, and asked me to tell you that he is sorry to miss seeing you. The mood of sustained happiness and anticipation remained with me all during the long drive out of Los Angeles and beyond. Occasionally, we exchanged a few words, but for the most part there was little conversation. Eventually we turned off the main highway and bumped along over a narrow road for perhaps half an hour, searching the darkness for a first glimpse of the scout. At last I saw a faint glow in the distance. As the outline became clearer, I knew from its size that it must be the Saturnian scout, or a similar ship. It was the same, and Zell was there to greet us. The journey to the hovering mother ship was quickly over. Is this? I began, and Zell smiled and nodded. The Saturnian ship you were on before? Yes. The landing procedure was accomplished exactly as on the previous visit. As Zell led me in the direction of the large lounge, he paused a moment and said, it was the master himself who asked that we bring you tonight. This visit is entirely that he may talk to you. If it was possible for my joy to mount higher, it did so on hearing this. On entering, I was struck anew with the beauty of this room, and the harmony that filled it. All whom I had met before were present, and no strangers except for two beautiful women who resembled one another closely enough to be twins. I guessed, before introductions were made, that these were Saturnian women. On the right sleeves of their blouses, near the shoulder, were the same insignia I had seen on the shirts of the Saturnian men on the last visit. After my friends had welcomed me, I exchanged greetings with the two lovely strangers. There were differences both in their persons and garments from those of the other women. Since they remained standing close to me, I had an opportunity to check these in detail. Both women had very dark brown hair and eyes, and thick curling lashes. The complexions were of an almost startling whiteness, with a rose cast in the cheeks. The lips were full and red. Both appeared to have a greater vivacity of manner than the other women. I believe, however, that this had nothing to do with the fact that they were Saturnians, but was rather a characteristic of their own personalities. They wore light blue blouses with long, full sleeves drawn in tightly at the wrists. These blouses were more like short jackets and were finished at the neck with a narrow rolled collar. The skirts were of the same color and material. The latter appeared very light in texture and of a quite different weave from any I had seen. The full skirts had wide waistbands and were ankle length, like those of the other women. They wore fawn-colored sandals on their small feet. I did not see the master and presume that the reason all remained standing was in expectation of his entrance. "There is quite a bit of activity on the part of your Air Force tonight," Rama told me, "and the ship is now rising. We shall probably remain hovering at about 90,000 feet from your Earth." Needless to say, I did not feel, nor had I felt, any movement whatsoever. At this point the master entered and all turned towards him. As his eyes met mine, he smiled and walked on to where a table was surrounded by low chairs with arms, covered with attractively upholstered material of an appearance something like dull silk. Rama led me over and the master indicated that I take the place on his right. One of the Saturnian ladies sat on my other side and while the people were settling into their seats, I seized the opportunity to ask if she could explain the meaning of the insignia. She obligingly twisted around so that I could examine the one on her right shoulder and said, "It denotes that Saturn is the tribunal of this system." Although I did not know exactly what she meant by tribunal, she did not explain further. The design consisted of a sphere encircled by a ring, much as the ringed planet appears through our telescopes, and inside the sphere was a balanced pair of scales. Thanking her, I settled back into my chair and found it difficult to believe that anything could be so comfortable. Not even our air cushions yield to and yet support the body as did that chair. The master began to speak. "My son, if some of what you will hear tonight seems repetitious, it is because the things of which I shall speak are important to your understanding, and perhaps a fuller explanation will help you to retain them." I was glad to hear him say this, since, even with the telepathic help which had been promised me, I still worried for fear I might not remember it all. "A great fallacy which has grown on the people of Earth," the master said, "is the custom of dividing into many parts that which should never be divided. You have multiple divisions in forms and teachings, many firm likes and dislikes, all of which serve only to add to the state of confusion on your planet. We of other worlds have no such divisions but realize the relationship and the interdependence of all things. I know that you have felt deeply the power and radiance of our conception of deity there on the wall before you. By keeping always this image visual before our eyes, and remembered in our hearts, we never forget that within him all forms have their being. He is the giver of what you call life unto men. He is also the giver of life through us to our creations in which he is the instructor of what is to be created. He it is who knows how the minerals and the elements are to be combined, not only to serve us, but the universe as well, ever better as they are brought up through the experiences of one form, to be fitted for a higher form. We on Venus, and on other planets in varying degrees of evolvement, recognize the minerals and elements as the essence of ever-active divine expression, with a steady newness. And therefore monotony, as you know it on Earth, can never be. So, as the creation of a divine creator of the total universe is respected by us, so also is the creation of man who guides the elements in different channels of service likewise respected and honored. In turn, the elements become desirous to serve better each day that they, too, may rise to a higher standard of service. A service which shall never cease, for it is eternal. As an example, that you may understand this more clearly, the bit of iron which you find among the minerals of your earth serves you in one particular channel. Yet by impregnating this iron with a force which you call electricity, the iron changes from a previous service to another type of service called magnetic. Therefore it has been endowed with a power of attraction which it did not have before. This is what we mean by elements or minerals evolving for a better service. For first it was merely the mineral iron, then it reached a higher state of service where it was able to attract, which in the original state it could not do. And so, on and on, this iron can evolve toward higher and higher service rendered unto its creator. So you see what is meant when I speak of the minerals and the other elements serving man. By doing this, they themselves are endowed with certain powers of comprehension through serving the all-inclusive intelligence. This law, I believe, is known to you on Earth as the law of transmutation, or the law of evolution. A human body like yours and mine is composed of elements, as well as minerals. And you can prove that these elements and minerals which compose your body do obey the impressions placed upon them. For if the impressions are of a joyous nature, the being called man is joyful. But if of an angry state, then the body expresses that, proving that the minerals and the elements within it are constantly serving the intelligence. Without it they cannot rise to a higher state of expression. You men of Earth continually invite disaster by creating combinations which are opposing each other rather than working together. You have made of yourselves something other than your divine origin. You have added many false concepts to your being instead of remaining natural, like a beautiful woman who is exalted in beauty, yet adds many trinkets that finally exalt themselves above her beauty. You have done the same by adding that which had no true life or intelligence. Let me point out to you something inherent in the being of man by which we live on the planet Venus. While you do not, though these principles apply to yours as well as other worlds. You claim that you are a being made up of five senses, and list others to be added, the sixth, seventh, and so on. You seek to develop these arbitrarily conceived senses instead of understanding and developing those which do exist. In professing that there are powers of clairvoyance, clairaudience, mental telepathy, or extrasensory perceptions, you thereby divide one total phase of expression into at least four separate classifications. And, as a result, your true identities have become muddled and lost. Let me elucidate this a little. In the first place, you are a product by mineral and elements of what you call nature. In the second place, as an intelligent expression of that form, you are a product of your divine creator. The mineral and elemental part of your being has been endowed with four avenues, or senses, through which it expresses in what you call a physical manifestation. Intelligence or divinity expresses through every cell of the entire form which you have labeled physical. The four senses to which I have just referred are sight, hearing, taste and smell. Observe that I did not mention the sense you on earth speak of as touch. Because touch is the intelligence that precedes all others. Let me explain it this way. No one in any world can build a form like yours, or cause it to live as do you. This can be done only by the creator of the universe. Therefore, you must admit that when conception of a form takes place within a form, that mother-to-be knows not what is to be done for the perfect construction of another body. Yet the conception grows toward a complete manifestation, until finally it is born into what you call the physical world. When it is born, this complete form has eyes, ears, mouth and nose. The eyes see, and the ears hear sounds for the first time. The nose smells and the palate tastes for the first time. These were all created as parts of the body. As the body witnesses the physical world for the first time, so do these four avenues of expression, for they are of the body. Yet the mother of this form knew not how it was built. But the sense of touch, which I omitted from the group of senses, did know. For remember, while the little one was still in the building process within the mother's body, if a pressure was put onto the mother's body, the body within was also alerted to that pressure. And notice the separation between the two, for when the body to be born was ready to make a change within the mother neither controlled nor instructed this action, which does separate, in this case, the sensation into two distinct reactions, the mother's and the child's. This proves that each operates in the field of sensation or feeling independent of the other. Yet they are a body within a body. Also proving that this thing called touch or feeling is acting in the field of intelligence, knowing what to do and when to do it. It seems to be the knower. When we take this into consideration for the purpose of analyzing, the sense of touch is recognized as a cardinal one, or in reality the soul of the body, part of the all-inclusive intelligence. For it is a feeling, and feeling, as you know it, is a state of alertness, or conscious consciousness as we know it. Now, when this consciousness leaves the body of minerals and earth known as man, the eyes, the ears, the taste and the smell no longer function. For when the body becomes unconscious it does not recognize anything like a touch. In other words, you could beat that body and it would not have the sensation which is called feeling or of being touched. On the other hand, if one loses the eyes, loses the hearing, the taste and the smell, but retains the sense of touch, which is consciousness, one is more or less alive and intelligently operating. And when the body is then struck with something, it feels the touch or hurt, where it did not in the previous state. Thus it is easy to see that the real intelligence of the body called man is that which has been so misused and mislabeled, the sense known to you as touch, which is the soul or the life of that body. The human body, and the same is true of all other forms, is actually constructed for services that its minerals and elements will render through the four major physical avenues of expression. While the fifth, touch, is a universal one which gives sensation to the other four. Once this touch sense leaves, the other four have no power of sensation or operation. When man realizes this fact, he then finds himself as the real person behind the mask. And when this is done, the limited prison in which he has lived for so long dissolves, and he becomes a dweller of the universe. As such, he sees the law in operation in every form, regardless of what that form may be, and including the planet itself upon which he is living. Then does man know himself. And by so doing, he knows all things. Also he knows his Creator as he has never known him before, which is the universal or divine intelligence. It is through this recognition or understanding that mineral man rises to a condition of unity with the Father, wherein the Father and the Son become one. Once the man of earth learns this and realizes it, not knowing it with his mind alone, but by living it as we have done, he shall have the same joy in life as we have on other planets. As your Bible says, the prodigal son has thus returned home by giving up his physical mineral vanities and making these serve him for the service of his Father, rather than he serving them. Of course, my son, you know this law and have been trying to live as well as teach it for years. It is neither new to you nor is it any original teaching of yours. It is a universal law which all men must know and live if they hope to enjoy their divine birthright as sons of the Father. You must impress, as best you can, understanding in the minds of your brothers on earth that knowledge of themselves is the first requisite. And the first questions, who am I? Through what avenues can I express in order to return to the oneness from which I have fallen? Remind them that man has nothing to add. He has only to express that which already is his. But he must learn to understand what it is he has, and live this understanding. For it is the living that is important. Once this is accomplished, the earthly man's woes will soon vanish. For then these elements which are used in making up the four senses of sight, hearing, taste and smell will begin to evolve to where they will become more sensitive instruments, not only to serve in what you call the physical world, but also in service of the universal. Another fact which earthmen must realize is that universal includes the physical within itself, not outside it. For everything which takes place within the universe is also within the divine or supreme intelligence, not outside it. That is why we are as much concerned with your world and your life as we are with our own, for we are all in the same kingdom of the supreme intelligence. We have learned and lived this for all these hundreds and thousands of years. Because of this understanding, we cannot injure with the motive of injuring as you do on earth. For we know that we would have to live with whatever we distorted, since all is within the same household. Once the mind of physical man rises to this degree of understanding, it does not see anything as ugly or unpleasant, but sees all in the process of going toward the holiness of beauty and exaltation. As earthmen consider this law, they will see and understand how all is working from the low to the high, which is the universal purpose, and not from the high to the low. Yet the power expresses from the high even unto the low that the low may have the strength to rise unto the high. There is eternal blending, but never division. Knowing this law, the inhabitants of our planets have used it for their development and through its use have grown to a recognition of everlasting life and the role of all therein. The thought of overpopulation flashed through my mind as this is so often a topic of concern for nations on earth. Without the slightest interruption, this man of great wisdom answered my thought. No, my son. We are not overpopulated and such a condition never threatens us, as it does your people of earth. For we do not replenish without thought or planning as do you. There is a natural law of balance by which we abide. Besides, Those who have attained much knowledge on one planet may, if they choose, seek rebirth on another. Toward this end they have two choices. They may make this change through the channel of birth, or be taken direct by a ship, still in the same body. This has happened many times, even on Earth. The vast majority have advanced from the Earth toward another planet through rebirth. Others, though few, have been taken direct as your Bible tells you. Death takes place upon other planets the same as on Earth. But we do not call it death, and we do not mourn for those who have left, as you on Earth do. We know this leaving means only a change from one condition or place to another. We realize that it is no more than a moving out of one house and into another. We cannot take our houses with us when we go from one place to another. Neither can we take a body, which is the house, from one world to another in death. The material of your earthly bodies belongs to Earth, and must remain there to maintain your world. But when you move from Earth to another planet, that world will lend you of its materials to build a house according to the needs and conditions that exist there. Earthman's concept of the universe is very small. He cannot conceive of a universe without limits. Yet he uses the word eternity. Eternity, according to man's own definition, denotes no beginning and no ending. Then how vast is the universe? As vast as eternity. So man is not a temporary manifestation. He is an eternal manifestation. And those of us who have learned this truth are living in a constant present, for it is always the present. We of Venus dress much as you do, and we do many things in a similar way. There is no great difference between our form and yours, or in the garments for that form. The great difference lies in our understanding of who we are. Since we have learned that life is all-inclusive and that we are that life, we know that we can hurt nothing without hurting ourselves. And life, to be life eternally, must remain in a prime state of its being, and to express this, must be ever new. Therefore, as I have said, monotony is never experienced by us. Each moment that passes is a joyous one. And it matters not what work we have to do. If what you call labor needs to be done, we do it with full joy and love in our being. And on our planet, each day brings its quota of things to be done, exactly as on yours. Every man and every form is respected alike for the services they render. None are judged as to shortcomings. It makes no difference as to the kind of service undertaken, be it what you call menial or not. All services are equally acknowledged. People on Earth have been given this law, for it was brought there by those who knew of it and who at one time practiced it on other planets. It was expressed in the building of Solomon's temple. The hiring of labor in the vineyard where all alike were paid a penny at the end of the day, as recounted by Jesus, your Messiah, was an acknowledgement of the equal honor in serving. As the great master paused and passed his hand lightly over his brow, I realized that I had been listening with such intentness that I had not stirred. Moving my body to a different position, I waited for him to resume speaking. Although the air on all planets differs slightly, contrary to the present beliefs of your scientists, Earthman could go anywhere in the universe without discomfort. Indeed, this will be his natural heritage once he attains an understanding of himself and realizes the great adaptability of his form. Again he paused and bowed his head slightly as though in meditation before he continued. We have developed to a degree of conscious perception which does not permit us to sit amongst any group of people without the thought of blessing. For their very presence before us is a blessing because we do not see them merely as people, but as the divine intelligence in a living state through a form known as human. Our awareness is the same toward every form outside the human. We see the divine consciousness expressing itself through the growth of any and all forms, from the smallest to the largest. We have learned that nothing, no form whatever, can be what it is without life passing through it, or supporting it. And the life we recognize is the divine supreme intelligence. Never a moment passes, even in sleep, that we are not aware of this divine presence. This is the true purpose of the form man, that for which he was created. For, while all other forms give expression in their particular field of service, his is the evolved form of mineral and elements capable of expressing the highest state of divine intelligence. We are not on guard against one another, nor do we covet anything belonging to others. For we are all equal participants of the goods of our planets. I understood clearly all that this great teacher of other worlds was saying, but a question entered my mind.